Let's do a chin.
Om avyayam tumamangani vak pranas chakshushrotramato palamindriyani cha sarvani sarvam brahma upanishadam maham brahma nirakuryam mama brahma nirakarot anirakaranamastu anirakaraname astu Tadatmani nirate ya upanishat sudharmaste mai santu te mai santu Om shanti shanti shanti
Let's go to verse 5 Yad Vacha
Yad vachana bhyuditam
yena vak abhyudyate
tadeva brahmatvam viddhi
nedam yadidam upasate Sandhi. You just follow. Yeah. Oh, we could. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, let's try that. Yet vacha.
Yet vacha.
Anabhyuditam.
Anabhyuditam.
Yena.
Vak.
Abhyudyate.
Tat eva brahma.
Tvam viddhi. Na idam yat idam upasate. So yad vacha anabhyuditam means that it's in a past passive participle, that kind of past passive participle that which anabhuditam is not revealed or illumined by speech. Vacha is 3-1 by speech from vacha. So yet that which is not illumined by speech, then yena by which speech is illumined. So you could say that which isn't illumined, isn't revealed by speech, but itself which reveals speech, means lights it up, okay? But by which speech, vak abhyudyate, is revealed, passive tense, vak. Nominative 1-1. Then it says, Tadeva, that indeed is Brahman, Tvam Viddhi. May you know that alone to be Brahman. Eva can be alone there. So, Tvam Viddhi, may you know, Tadeva, that indeed is Brahman. What is indeed Brahman? That which is not revealed or illumined by speech, but by which speech is revealed or is illumined. Know that indeed. May you know that indeed to be Brahman, or that alone to be Brahman. Then it says, not this which idam upasate, not that which is worshipped as this, as an object. Upasate means an object, or meditating on, or contemplating as an object. So this verse is one of 6 verses. And all 6 are follow exactly the same pattern. So Swamiji writes about this in his commentary, saying, why do they have to say this over and over, not by speech, not by the ears, not by the mind, not by the eyes, not by the prana, saying primarily exactly the same thing. And so how he talks about this, and I think exactly kind of very much within the tradition, is that it's really meditative, it's contemplative, where you're seeing, recognizing the same thing over and over and over again, but in reference to different upadis, in reference to the sense organs, the Bach, which is really the Kharmendriya, the Manas, which receives all of the input. So each one of these things, we're saying almost exactly the same thing about. And so you have to recognize it, instead of just, because you could just say, by the sense organs and by the mind, you know, or by all the luminaries, by the sense organs and the mind. And just have one, you just really need one verse. You don't need six verses. But we have six verses. And so that's so that your mind can just absorb the fact of it, that the Atma is not an object for you to know. It's not something to be known as an object. That's an impossibility, because then who's the one illumining that? Who's the knower of that? Say the self is known as an object, then who's the self that knows it? It's not possible at all. And so, it's not possible at all, but this is something that has to be realized again and again, because what we call the Dehatma Buddhi, right? Deha means the body. Atma is the self. Buddhi means that firm, very firm conviction, right? That this physical body, means all the upadis really, is the Atma. And so again and again and again, there are these teaching methodologies that continue to bring your mind, to make your mind focus on kind of the independent nature of yourself. Yourself does not need to be known. It needs to be known by removing the ignorance that causes you to take this already known self to be something other than what it is. When I say already known, it's not already known in the sense that somebody is knowing it. It's already known because it's self-effulgent. Consciousness doesn't need another consciousness to give it the experience of consciousness, right? Being doesn't exist in its being. Amness doesn't need another being to give the amness being. See what I mean? So it is self, what we call swatha siddha, self-evident, you know? Or self, by self-evident we mean it doesn't require anything else to make it known. And that's the only thing that's like that. Try to think of something else that is self-evident. Your mind isn't self-evident, it needs to be illumined by consciousness. Your sense organs aren't self-evident because they need the backing of the mind, which is illumined by consciousness, which passes on that consciousness to them. What about the objects that the sense organs fall on? They're not self-evident. They need your consciousness. They need your pramana, your means of knowledge, to land on them so that then they can be illumined. Where's an exception to that? There's really no exception. There's one thing that is self-evident, and everything else shines after that. And that self-evident one is neither the known, vidita, or the unknown. How could it be the unknown? How could it even be the known? If it's known in a subject-object relationship, that's not a possibility. Right? Because then you're the one who's illumining it. So you're not illumining yourself. You're not illumining yourself as an object. That would make no sense. Right? So if you're not illumining yourself as an object, then how are you illumining it at all? You're not illumining yourself at all. You're the luminary. You're the conscious being. There is no other conscious being. So what, then you say, well, yeah, but what about all of us? What about all of us? There's only one us. There's only one of us. Why? Because everything that you've identified with as yourself is actually illumined. It's actually an object of your experience, really just enough. The five sense organs are enough that make all of this body, mind, sense organs that you take to be yourself, when you analyze it, well, these are as much objects of my experience as the whole universe, of every experience I have. To know this body requires a vritti. If you don't have the vritti there, directed at the body, then there's no vritti of the body, and the body is not known at that time. But we don't think about that, because whenever we do direct our attention to the body, it enjoys consciousness. And when we don't direct our attention to the body, it's directed somewhere else, so we're not thinking about the body at that time. And since we have the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, the subtle body with the five sense organs reflecting the sattva, and the mind is sattva, the sense of touch totally pervading this body as though enjoys me all of the time. These are the tricks. This is why we don't really need to question anything. It's all taken care of, you know, until we start analyzing and become a mumukshu. just this, that you cannot have an experience which is free of consciousness. Every experience that you have, inward, outward, inward in terms of what's going on inside in my mind, etc., what's going on out here in the world, or the meditative states, or active imagination when I'm doing inner child work, all of those experiences, without exception, require a vritti. And the vritti, right, always is pervaded by consciousness, because it's sattva. And so, when am I not a conscious being? From the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, when am I not? You know, even if you do the waking, dream, and deep sleep state, I'm still always a conscious being. I don't think that one state of experience negates the other state of experience. I don't think when I'm having a dream, oh, I've just negated the waking state. Why? Because I'm still here. I'm still here, and I'm the dreamer. I'm in the dream state, so everything is fine. I'm still the one who's there illumining every single experience that I have, so everything is fine. There needs to be some sort of viveka, some sort of mumukshutvam, jignasa. I need to know who I am, why I'm here, who is God, what happens to me when I die. I have to know. I can't take this anymore. I must know. And then this type of inquiry becomes really meaningful. But until this inquiry becomes necessary and meaningful, that you are a conscious being is taken care of. The only thing is, because all your body, mind, sense organs enjoys you. There's no distance between you, this me, and your body, or your sense organs, or your mind. As long as that's in your field, it enjoys consciousness. So that's your experience is very much taken care of, except that the things that you take to be yourself, especially the body, is going to die. So now it's not so nice that even though this is me and I am a conscious being, this conscious being that I am is going to die. I don't know that that's true. I can't believe that that is true. I can't even imagine totally snuffing out my existence to become non-existent. There must be something else. Because that's not a very nice situation. It's an inconceivable situation. Let me put it like that. It's an inconceivable situation. Just try to imagine it. It's a very funny imagination. Especially since the more you imagine it, the more that's left there is just you. The one who's imagining it, and you're blanking out everything else, and so you're just left as you. So it becomes a really good meditation in that way. So, this viveka has to take place, right? And because the viveka actually is a little bit tricky because of this satya-mitya relationship between myself and the universe, myself and my body, mind, sense organs, myself and the universe, it makes this viveka a little tricky, right? Tricky to understand, and you can easily be misled by it. And so first in the Upanishad, it started out saying, you know, you're the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech, the eyes of the eyes, all the eye of the eyes, all of life like this, in order to bring it much closer. Who is Brahman? Who are you? You're the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, on and on, the vak of the vak. And so now we're a little bit closer. But then we have to understand what that means. Is there someone lurking inside the ear? You know? Lurking around in my eyes and whatnot. Yeah. So the nature of the self, of yourself, has to be understood in reference to these things that we experience as a pramatra, as a knower, and as the objects known. We have to know who that one is when we say ear of the ear. And so when we just start to analyze, we did this a little bit this morning, your own nature, when you say, I am, for instance, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being. As an Ajnani, I'm totally free to say this. I am because I am. I do exist, and I am a conscious being. Now, good. That is really good. Because now we can establish that nothing else is, and nothing else enjoys consciousness. And so then that means, if I can establish that nothing else enjoys consciousness, and nothing else even enjoys existence, then the satya-mitya relationship becomes very natural. But until we understand that the nature, what the nature of existence, of being has to be, you know, we can't understand that our experience of this world as existing, you know, is in a sense born of ignorance. It's an understanding born of ignorance. And to understand that is not that hard. If you say that something is existent, just in the normal vocabulary, you don't need too much here. You say that something is existent, there's no possibility of that existent thing coming into being. Say if something is existent, it exists. It can't come, that existence, that quality of existence of being can't come into being. Being can't come into being. So you're talking about, when you say I exist, I am an existent being, you're talking about this quality of amness, really. I am, I exist. How can amness or being come into being? Because what is the prior condition? For something that comes into being, say you say being is coming into being. My being, my amness is coming into being. How is that possible for that to happen? Because what is the prior condition then of the existence which comes into being? Your amness, you say it comes into being. What is its prior condition since it's being born? What is it? Non-existence. If you say existence or amness, my amness comes into being, you know, then its prior condition is what? Non-existence. And say you say the amness, my amness goes out of being, then it also goes into non-existence. Or I'm talking just about being, amness. I'm not talking about my body is, and yes, it's born and it dies. That's it. That's what freaks everybody out. That's why we become mumukshus, one of the main reasons. But we're talking, this is the big question, we're talking about my being. I am a conscious being. Does your being come into being? Does your amness come into being? If it does, it's bordered by non-existence. And that is impossible. Nothing absolutely on any level of experience, internally or externally, comes into being from non-existence. That's a non-possibility. And so say you get down just to, you know, going in just to, okay, here I am, I am, I exist, I am an existent being. You say that. But if you say that, then you have to say that the being that I am is not an object within time and space, because everything in time and space comes into being and goes out of being. I can't be subject to time, you know. At the bottom line, when we get to the bottom line, I cannot be subject to time. And the amness that I am is not just inert amness. I am a conscious being. And the nice thing about this is, a lot of it is very nice, actually, but the existence, my being, is not an object I can look at. I just simply am that. I am an existent, conscious being. I can't look at the consciousness either. Try to look at consciousness. It's not possible. You can't look at consciousness. You can only be consciousness. You can't look at existence. You can only be existence. There is no existence out here to look at. All you get to look at out here in the creation, and internally, that's also out. That's also external to your being, because you're aware of your mind and your sense organs. So this conscious being that I am is not something that I can have a subject-object relationship with. It's something that is just self-evident, self-shining, conscious being. And so if it's not something that can be objectified, even within the creation, there's no conscious being walking around. And yet, everything enjoys conscious being. Everything. Everything internally, everything externally. By conscious being, consciousness is, it is known, 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 or I am a knower, you are a knower, you are a knower, because of the sattva of the mind and sense organs. Everything we experience enjoys consciousness, either as the object which is known or the knower. So consciousness in the form of the knower, consciousness in the form of the object, and there are no exceptions internally or externally. And so now, this conscious being that I recognize as myself, which cannot be objectified, somehow, the whole creation enjoys it. Doesn't it? Because there's nothing that you experience that doesn't have being. It is, it is, it is, it is. There's no exception. It is, it is. If you experience it, it is. And if you experience it, it is known. No exception. So the whole universe enjoys the same conscious being which you enjoy. The conscious being which you are, non-objectifiable, is the conscious being that the whole universe enjoys equally. Some have little mirrors that we call minds, and they all of them don't just exist and are known because the mind reflects sattva, so they're also a knower, but the knower also is known. Right? I know I'm aware of my eyes which are seeing forms. My existent conscious eyes, my eyes which enjoy existent consciousness, are seeing forms which enjoy existence consciousness, which are reflected in the vritti which enjoys existence consciousness. And I would say, going back just to the language, my own amness, I am a conscious being. Then I would say, you are a conscious being, right? That person over there is a conscious being. He is a conscious being. She is a conscious being. But conscious being is conscious being, non-objectifiable. So I am that. There is not room for two, because time and space and every other experience I have is objectifiable, you know, and exists within time and space, internally or externally. I can't. There's no possibility of consciousness walking around within duality and going through changes. We know that. Nobody's going to say, that's not true. I just saw him the other day, a conscious being walking around. No namarupa, no name for me. He was just simply walking around. Very weird experience. We just know for sure that's not the situation. But we also know that there is nothing in this creation that doesn't enjoy conscious being. It is, it is, it is. It is known, it is known, it is known. The jivas have knowership because of the sukshma sharira, because of the mind and sense organs. You know, it's like the mirror and the rock. The sunny woman's the mirror, and wow, the sun seems to have entered into the mirror. The same sun illumines the rock, but it doesn't enter the rock. It doesn't enter the rock. Why doesn't it enter the rock when it enters the mirror? Oh, because the mirror has sattva, so to speak. And the rock is just tamas. And so it doesn't have the upadi that can give that sense of being the conscious being. But both of them are not the sun. In this case, we say, this conscious being, this me that I am, right, can't be two, because it's not an object, and yet everything enjoys it. And just think of what would happen if it didn't. What if consciousness, conscious existence, was over here, and this universe was over here? How would it exist? How would it enjoy existence or being? Because it comes from non-existence and goes back into non-existence. It's subject to change. So it can't be away from existence. Existence, being, has to be itself. but itself doesn't go through any type of change because it's not an object in the creation. So the being that it enjoys, being non-objectifiable and not an object within time and space, therefore, can't be two. And it doesn't, we don't really want it to be two because there's no conscious beings walking around that we've ever heard of or seen. You know? And I am not two, right? And I'm also not objectifiable at all. I just simply am. And the whole universe is in the same situation as my particular body, mind, sense organs, upadhi is. The me for my body, mind, sense organs is not objectifiable. It's not, I am not an object to myself. I am self-evident. Now, who has a different story? Oh, I don't know how you could even say that. I'm myself, I mean. What can we say? Is it a different story for you? My conscious being is objectifiable. How is that? You know, consciousness aware of consciousness. Is consciousness aware of consciousness? Or is it just self-evident? It's very tricky. Yeah, my consciousness is aware of consciousness. I'm aware that I'm a conscious being. I am a conscious being. That's right, because you are a conscious being. Not because a conscious being needs to illumine a conscious being in order to make the conscious being known. I just simply am that. There's no activity involved. It's just my swarupa. How is your story different? It's not different. It's exactly the same. But what does that mean? It means that the conscious being that I am that is self-evident is the conscious being that you are, which is self-evident. How could that be? Well, because I'm not an object in time and space, and neither are you. And so what's going to make there be two conscious beings if they're the conscious being is the luminary of space? How could that possibly be? Then how can there be two? How can the conscious being that is me, this very personal me, not be the conscious being of Ishvara? Why can't... It has to be that this conscious being, which I call me, is the me of you, is the me of all beings, is the me of Ishvara, of Hiranyagarbha, is Brahman. It is the Adhishtana. It is the Adhishtana of everything that is, because if it weren't, the things that it's not the Adhishtana of don't exist. Because existence isn't an object floating around out within duality. Existence is what every single thing that exists enjoys. And this existence is not something that can be born. Existence can't be born, because if it were born, then it's born out of non-existence, because existence isn't going to be born from existence. Imagine, existence is born from existence. It's already existent. It can't be born from existence because it's already existent. So I'm not born. Right? I'm not becoming. The existence that I am is the existence that you are, is the existence that the whole universe is, not as an object, but as the Adhishtana. All of this without me, without the, has no existence at all. And they're both things are cataclysmic. There is no being for anything, and there is no knownness. It's not here. But that's not at all what we experience. Everything is here, everything is known that falls into my purview, and for Ishvara, the whole creation is known because the upadhi is infinite. Yeah. So, how to make anybody understand this? So, so he says, because there is only one conscious being, that which cannot be revealed or illumined by speech. All of these things in the world we can describe. They are subject to description, everything in this world. You know why they can be described? Because they exist within duality and they have certain characteristics. One characteristic, this is for any nama rupa, anything in the creation, it belongs to a certain jati. The jati means it belongs to a group. So I can use a general sadhana term like, it's a dog. That's very non-specific, but we know that there are such a thing as dogs. There are such a thing as rivers, as cats. You think of anything as, Swamiji uses coconut trees. They're a jati, they're a species. And so we can label something, oh yeah, that's a dog, or that's a coconut tree. A coconut tree, there are many, many coconut trees, and this is one of them. It belongs to a group, right? So that's one way that we can categorize these objects that we experience. And then we can also, once we categorize the object, what kind of an object, it's a dog or a cat or a river, you know, or a coconut tree, then we can actually give particular qualities, like for the dog. It's a black dog. My dog's a white dog. But this is a black dog, you know. This dog has really long, furry hair. Those are gunas. Those are adjectives. So we have the object that belongs to a species, the dog object, and then we give qualities to it. Right? Because we can see it, we can see all those qualities. So first we have the jati, and then we have gunas, and then we have what's called kriyas. My dog runs so fast. He is one of the fastest running dogs I've ever seen. Dogs eat a lot. They never get tired of eating. These are all kriyas. You're describing what your animal does. It does all kinds of things. You can paint all kinds of pictures. Their color, their different qualities, and their activities, what they do. Those are kriyas. So you've got jati, guna, kriya. And then you have sambandhas. Then you have relationships, you know. My dog loves to be with other dogs. They like to play together. Those are sambandhas. Those are relationships. So these are four ways of describing these objects that we come into relationship with. They describe it by the species, by the qualities, by their functions and activities, and by their relationships. Okay? So these things we can all talk about. And use words to really refine and pinpoint the nature of that particular object. We can teach so much about that object, even with just these four functions that themselves divide into smaller and smaller functions. So speech can do a lot. Speech can do a lot in terms of being able to give knowledge and understanding of things in the world, or things that exist even on a subtle level within time and space. Speech is so valuable. But what can speech say about me? About consciousness, right? Consciousness, Brahman, has no jati. There are not two Brahmans. There's only one Brahman. Okay? So there's no jati there. There's one without a second. No jati. For me, so myself, I have no jati. I have no species. I'm not part of a species. Also, what are my qualities? What qualities do I have? What are my attributes? I have no attributes. Well, don't you say, like, you're existent and your attribute is consciousness, or your consciousness as an attribute of existence? No, those are just two words for one and the same thing. Existence is consciousness. Consciousness is existence. Neither one is objectifiable to be an object in the world, to have a guna, right? And so when we say sat-chit, it's not sat and chit, or chit that has sat, or sat that has chit. It's the conscious me. The me that I am is a conscious being. I exist, and I am a conscious being. Consciousness and the sat-chit are exactly the same thing. They're two words pointing to one thing, sat-chit. So it's not about being a quality, as though there's some substance that then has an attribute on top of it, kind of like what we did in the Panchadashi, you know, you're talking about all those confusing things. Good. I study my brains out. Okay. This is all confusing. Okay. So anyway, here. So imagine Brahman is a substance that has this attribute consciousness on top of it. How can it have an attribute on top of it when it's not objectifiable and doesn't exist within time and space? How can you have two, like a substance and an attribute? That's not possible. This conscious being, I am this conscious being, consciousness is being, being is consciousness. And again, I'm free of time and space, so where is there any kriya? So well, as a conscious being, I do this and that, and this is my job, this is my function, these are the things I do. But you don't have any hands and legs. You don't have a mind. You don't have sense organs. You're just conscious being that cannot be objectified. So you don't do anything. So I can't describe you in that way. You do all these things. You do so many things. I'm sorry, you don't really do anything at all. You don't do anything. There's nothing going on. Because there's no time and space. You know? So that won't work. Sambandha. You say, well, there's a sambandha. I have a relationship with this universe. I have a relationship with this body, mind, sense organs. This is my body, mind, sense organs. For there to be a relationship, it has to be among equals. In other words, in a given order of reality, you can have many, many relationships, right, in an order of reality. So say in the waking state, you have many relationships, many functions, many relationships in the waking state. And so those relationships are called sambandhas. But do you have a sambandha with somebody in the dream state? I don't think so. That is a different order of reality. Within the dream state, same order of reality, there's all kinds of sambandhas, right? All types of relationships. But the waking state doesn't have a relationship with the dream state because they're two orders of reality. They don't cross like that to have some sort of a connecting link. In fact, the only connecting link is you. You are the connecting link. But then, is there a sambandha between you, the conscious being that you are, and this world? Is there a sambandha, a relationship between me and this body, mind, sense organs? We'd have to say no, because again, there are two orders of reality. So what can the relation be between a conscious being that cannot be objectified, that is free of time and space and anything that is objectifiable? How can there be a relationship between that one that can't walk into the creation? How can there be a relationship between me and this creation, which totally depends upon me for its existence? Right? If you remember back 20 minutes ago, this creation has no existence of its own, because it comes into being and goes out of being, everything in it. That means it's bordered by non-existence. And yet the whole thing enjoys existence. So what is the relationship between that which has no existence but totally enjoys existence? It itself has no existence, but there's nothing in it that does not exist. What relationship is that? We say that's not really a relationship at all, because those things have no existence whatsoever, and so they don't really exist, but we experience them as existing. So what is the relationship between existence and this world that has no existence but we experience as existing? What is the relationship? See, the relationship is satyam mitya. That which exists can't come into existence or go out of existence. Otherwise, by the very description, it comes from non-existence, and here it is. No, that's not possible. It can't come from non-existence. So I myself am free, totally free of time. I don't come into existence or go out of existence because I actually exist. But there's nothing out here that actually exists, because everything out here comes into being and goes out of being. It's subject to birth and death. So what kind of existence is that? Everything is bordered by non-existence. We have to get to what is actually there existing. And the only thing that is actually there existing is myself, that can't be objectified and be part of this order of reality. So as we kind of understand that, this whole world has a term for itself, and that is mitya. Mitya means it's not non-existent because we experience it, but the existence which it enjoys is the adhishtana. that the mithya enjoys. It's the reality, the satyam, which this as we call the adhishtana, which this whole universe completely enjoys. So we can say it is, even though none of it has any existence at all, from its own standpoint. But since it has no existence at all, right, zero, then it can't be away from me. Because you can't have something that has no existence in its own right be away from existence and still be there, right? Because it has no existence, so if it's away from existence, if it's away from me, it can't be there. And so I, in fact, am its being. I am its knownness because I am conscious being. And since I am this existence and I am this knownness as self-evident me, then I become the adhishtana, the thing that is actually here, that this whole universe depends upon for its knownness and consciousness. So then we can say, what kind of relationship is that? There's no relationship because it's not a relationship of equals. This creation is an expression. It is an expression of me. It enjoys, just like the really Bhagavan has so brilliantly made self-knowledge available to us by some of these drishtantas. Just like your imagination, Maya, your Maya imagination is an expression of you. When that imagination is there, it enjoys you, the conscious being which you are. When it is withdrawn, right, you are still there. You are there before, during, and after the imagination. Right? The imagination can't fly away from you, can't fly off and, oh, we're going to take off now, thanks for hosting me. You know, it can't do it. Because the existence that it enjoys is only me. I am its being. Dream, same situation. It has no being, it has no knownness, it has no consciousness apart from me. So I keep saying, just whenever you wake up from your dream, just notice the situation. It's just such a wonderful thing. You can do the same thing with your imagination. Just notice the situation. You have an imagination, and all this stuff is going on. You withdraw the imagination. What has actually happened? How can we even say that really nothing has happened? But you can say that. Nothing has really happened. Because what is actually there doesn't change at all. And so, when we say, you know, that which cannot be revealed by speech, it doesn't have any jati or any guna or any kriya or any sambandha, there's no way for speech to reveal it at all, really. But then who reveals speech? Speech requires consciousness, it requires existence. I know what I'm saying, I can objectify everything I'm saying. But everything I'm saying has to take place within here. Unless we learn how to use these lakshanas, these implications. And why can we use all these implications, these teaching methodologies to point to yourself? Only because you're here. You're not somewhere else, you're here. And because you're here, we can use words to differentiate the satyam from the mithya, to differentiate your innermost pratyagatma, your innermost self, from all of this. And that self cannot be two. So please know that one that can't reveal the atma, but which the atma, the self, reveals. Please know that one to be Brahman. The second line where it says, Tadeva Brahma Tvam Vidhi. May you know that Atma, that one, which speech can't reveal, but which reveals speech, may you know that one to be Brahman. Brahman means Brahat, that which is infinite. Yourself is being the only thing that is there. Infinite is not a good enough word. Yourself is all that is really here. There is no second thing. Everything that you would call a second thing is mithya. It totally has for its being only yourself. So infinite is not a good word. Non-dual is the best word. Non-dual means one without a second. So may you know that one to be Brahman. And then he says, Na idam, he says, not this which you meditate upon or which you pray to, you worship, upasate, not this which you pray to or you worship as this, as idam, that one you worship as an object. So what would that mean? Like say when I go to temple and I do a puja to Dakshinamurti, you know, who, or Jnaneshwari, could be the my Ishta Devata. I do a puja, I do a worship of Jnaneshwari. But when I'm doing a puja to Jnaneshwari, you know, and do I, because we're Jnanis, we have a little different way of understanding that puja. From the standpoint of me, as a jiva here within this creation, I can invoke Jnaneshwari's blessings, you know, for antakarana shuddhi, for mumukshutvam. I can invoke the blessings of Jnaneshwari, one jiva to the Lord. But do I think that Jnaneshwari is Brahman? Yes, I do. But everyone is Brahman, not just Jnaneshwari. Jnaneshwari is Brahman. I am Brahman. You're Brahman, right? Dakshinamurti is Brahman. Our pets are Brahman. The plants are Brahman. There is nothing that is not Brahman. So what if I am worshiping Brahman as Jnaneshwari? Jnaneshwari is Brahman. Dakshinamurti is not Brahman. Only Jnaneshwari is Brahman. You know. None of the other devatas is Brahman. Only Jnaneshwari. That's not right. No. Not this that we worship as. As if we worship a god or a goddess or anyone as Brahman, it's correct as long as you recognize that the whole creation, including the one who is doing the worshiping, is Brahman. So then, even though we should recognize all of Jnaneshwari, all of the devatas, all of the animals, all of the people in hell also, all of them are only Brahman. There is nobody that is not Brahman. The worshipper is Brahman. That which we worship is Brahman. And so knowing that, you know, knowing that, then we do upasana. We do upasana because we're seeking for some antakarana shuddhi for our mind so that we can really gain this knowledge, which is what? Everything is only Brahman. You know? I'd say, if I look like this, when I'm doing, because it's being a jnani, you'll have all of this knowledge and you'll be doing a puja. You know, so when you're doing the puja, while you're doing it, while you're asking for some punya for antakarana shuddhi, you also recognize that Jnaneshwari is Brahman and the one who's doing the puja also is Brahman, and the tools that you're in and the things that you're using to do the worship is Brahman, and the fire, the Agni, is Brahman. That's a Brahmarpanam Brahmahavihi Brahmagnau Brahmanahutam Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samantina. So we chant every day. You know, it means everything is Brahman. The fire is Brahman, the offering is Brahman, the one who makes the offering is Brahman, you know, the Havis is Brahman. You know, may you realize that. The one who does that karma, who does that samadhi, may they recognize everything as Brahman, more or less like that. It's a beautiful verse we chant every day. So if I do an upasana, Jnaneshwari is Brahman. The one who's doing the upasana is Brahman. The one who's making the offering is Brahman. The offering itself is Brahman. The whole thing is only Brahman. That's fine. But don't think that either just you inside of yourself, we'll see in the next verses, you inside of yourself is Brahman, and or that of all the devatas, that particular devata is Brahman. No. Everything is only Brahman. There is nothing else but Brahman. And Brahman is not an object walking around in creation for it to be one thing or another. So you think it, if you think it is one thing or another, then there's a problem. And so what is he going to say later after we do these six verses? He will say, you have to do more analysis. There's more to be done. It's exactly what he said. If you think that you know Brahman as an object, yes, and there's more analysis, more mimamsa that you need to do. So you just get busy, do your work. Okay. So these other five verses will probably just go through tomorrow. They're all the same in a way, just a few nuances.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.